This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I am Grace Cavalieri, and with me are two poets who are musicians, writers, composers, performers, but first of all, poets. And Kristen Kowalski-Farragut is going to tell you who she is by what she reads. Here's Kristen.
Thank you, Grace. I'm going to read from my collection, Love Letters from Cuckold Creek. And this poem has that title in its title, Alive on Cuckold Creek 2. It was for my child, Coley. In its grazing rock and marsh splendor, nothing invites abandon like water. I will go in, be rocked, claim buoyancy. I promise to be careful, as heartened by your concern as I am the glinting creek. We watched the bloom of jellyfish from the dock, and I understand to protect my skin. Drag a kayak through muck until free to glide. Later you ask, didn't you take the dead crabs at the edge as a sign? Or how you fell in the mud? Oddly, I did not. My mission was clear, to take to water. The great blue heron doesn't flinch as I approach. He looks into the middle distance, watching souls mingle with clouds. The reptile, I mistake for a crocodile, slithers closer, a spirit guide, past piers and chairs, until light peeking from cabins are left with plastic and metal far behind. It's just me, current, and other creatures inhaling earthen musk in brackish water. I scoop with palms to sprinkle on limbs and chest, a kind of baptism. I turn at the dam, row faster toward your waiting. Plan to step on the dock to subvert mud kablooey. Don't remember the tipping or the boat drag swim, then creep through sludge. You tell me I cursed a lot. Don't remember tentacles brushing my arms and legs, but I burn and itch. I remember you ask, what can I do? You feed me sun chips and wine, poke fun. My foolhardiness and your care level our dynamic. Your growing up and my return to pre-mama offbeat propel us toward hilarity, connection. You hope I learn a lesson, but it would be a perfect dream to do it again. Nothing invites abandon like water. I go in.
That's one thing I know. You go in. You enter everything. And when we read your poetry, we are there, Kristen. We are there. And with Kristen is Luther Jett, and here he is with a poem.
Hi, and I'm going to read a poem from my forthcoming collection. It's a relatively new poem, and the collection will be out next year, How We Carry One Another. It's the title of the collection. The title of the poem is The Broken. Let us talk of broken things, toys and china bowls, clocks, spoons, records, promises, our country, and speak of how not all broken things want fixing, how to be broken can become its own strength. Do you see how when language breaks down, it rearranges itself? That is what I want to talk about with you into the long, long night and past the gray dawn's breaking. Our arms have held so many broken things until at last each other.
Luther, the definition of poetry itself. To take all that's broken and put it together like that. If we read your books and your poems, what do we know about you? What do you think the reader knows about Luther Jett?
Oh, that's really a daunting question. I think maybe I'll rephrase the question. I'll put the question together differently. What does the reader know
Well, there must be themes. You must have recurring themes.
Well, there are themes. They would know. They would imagine that this writer is engaged with the world, with events happening in the world, and that this is a person trying to make sense out of it all. They would suspect strongly that relationships are very important to this writer, and also often very mysterious, and that a lot of what he is trying to do is sort out those relationships and make sense out of them as well.
I am so glad I pushed you, because you would never have thought of yourself by the point of view of the reader before as the creator, but your answer was right. I'm happy to tell you it was the right answer.
I didn't know it was going to be a pop quiz.
You can do it. You can do it. Kristen, same question. What is the story you are telling over and over again in all of your writing? We each are telling the same story over again. Yeah. I know mine. What is yours?
I think it's struggle and redemption and moving forward. When I started this collection particularly, it was originally in my head more or less sort of a how to recover from loss and painful situations that are finished and how to recover from them and settle oneself and learn self-reliance. For me, it's sort of three-pronged, or at least, right? So, self-love, it's trying to stay in the present, and recovery. So all of those themes sort of come around and around.
You're right again, Kristen. And especially what you say about starting with dark and redemption is very present in all of your work. The whole thing with you is transcendence, coming from one thing and morphing into something better. Every poem is about that. So let us hear two of your poems, Kristen, and then we'll get a better taste of you. Kristen Kowalski Farragut, I love her dearly.
Oh, I love you, Grace. Thank you. All right. So this one is my unironic love poem to my 17-year-old. The you in the magic that danced like to my twisted, swollen postpartum body to keep you sky face up when the dog pulled us down, tripping over wires. The you in the superhero suits, haunted houses in June, ironic poems still true, nonsensical essential laughs, courage in a world of judgophiles, in your own timeness, in your being proof of miracles. I don't care if you're a boy or girl or other, straight or gay, if you listen or ignore everything I say. You choose any name, I'll love them all. You fall anywhere on any spectrum, left, further left, quirky, quiet, perceptive, bright, the point of my devotion. The you is protected in the parts of me I most revere. Next, I'll read Dynamics. Instruct the kids to keep voices on zero. I hoped instead to whisper pianissimo, another little lost enchantment and a pixie falls dead. Add pressure to crescendo. Still remember fragility of folds, hairs, strings, gears. Everything strained may break, voice, heart, and peering into clouded memories included. Does the peering break, or do the eyes themselves? You tell me. I already fucking forget. But I know scales, resonance, elasticity. Rubber bands speak endurance, then a little tragedy when brittle and snap. They never care, calling out project like we're all in opera, though they don't know Italian. American suburbs hold power in soft humming whistles. I hear trains far off.
Yes, Kristen. That is Kristen, musician, poet, educator. We'll hear more about her. And One thing, when she said she's a poet mom, she means it. I mean, we've been raising her children on Facebook every day.
Thank you, Grace.
No one is more loving than Kristen. Her children can do no wrong. What if every child had that? Oh, my goodness. There would be no wars. There would be no wars. Luther, give us two poems. And the second one, we're going to peel away like an onion. But first of all, give us two poems.
Okay, the first poem is entitled Cliff House. A house of four rooms rests in four different places. There's a mountain in one, in another, the sea. I keep lost objects in the third. The fourth is where I sleep. When you come to me in clothes the color of earth next time, bring your violin. Here is where all roads intersect. Here all borders are erased. There is fog first, next lightning. In sheets, it keeps on forever. Smell of rain, taste of hidden pines. When you leave after a swallow of red wine, this house will follow. Wherever you go, this house.
Luther, I really have always admired you from a distance and up close because of the way you use nature to portray relationships. It is your symbolic way of approaching everything that matters that could come together. And you always use the elements to portray the difficulties and the predictabilities and the inevitability of trying to reach something, having two things trying to reach each other. That's so evident in all of your work. Now read us another poem, and then we're going to grill you on it.
Okay. I will just read it straight. Elegy. The night my uncle died, it was morning in Reykjavik, and seagulls circled above the hot dog kiosk across from my hotel, where I blinked awake, not yet aware an age had ended. He was in the Navy. They all served then, my uncle, my father, and they all knew why. After the war, Grandma tucked away my uncle's sailor suit. Years later, I found it was still crisp. In those times, it was possible to count on the fingers of your hand and know that five was five and that two fingers spelled victory. It remains possible. I refuse to say otherwise. And kings go naked. And even when night and fog creep in, seabirds call us. Hot lava pulses beneath our feet, and one plus one can still add up. My uncle's life was never in vain.
Wow, that's a powerful poem. And was a story and characters and a situation and a plot. So I would like to know where you were when you thought of writing that. Then what happened next? I want to get people in on this. What did you sit down and just write a draft? Did you have an entry image? Take the poem apart and tell us the working parts of that poem, the imagery, the characters, what you did and how you did it. No problem.
Well, I think that I started to work on that poem in my head somewhere between Reykjavik and Bergen, because I really was overseas and I couldn't get back for my uncle's funeral. But I wanted to do something. So this elegy kind of evolved. And of course, yeah, he was a hero of mine when I was growing up. My dad was a hero. They both fought in World War II. And we all know that what they fought for is under threat right now in so many ways. And so that was where when I started actually writing it down, the first stanza came quickly, and then the words started to flow, and my thoughts kind of flowed to that. Yeah, but they were, what they did was what they could, and it should never have been in vain, and it shouldn't be in vain, and it won't be in vain. And that's kind of, that's how my thoughts ran.
We get that. So that is kind of the buoyancy under that. There is a feeling of homage and an honorific in that poem. My favorite word is crisp.
What is that
line?
It must have been so full of starch.
But there's something about that which is very significant. Years later, to lift that suit, and it is still as it once was, it makes loss more difficult or better. I don't know, but it's a significant image in your poem.
Thank you.
Yeah. And once again, there you are with separation of individuals trying to come together, whether in memory or actuality or history. That is your MO. That is your MO. Kristen Kowalski Farragut, who is a mom, a poet, a teacher, musician. Read us two poems, and then we're going to do something to you on the second one as well.
All right.
I could tell while you're waiting for that the book is called Love Letters from Cuckold Creek. I think the title says it all.
Thank you. All right. I'm going to read A Month of Thursdays, epilogue. Each moment extends a blanket, mirror, hammer, wine, pen, chance to choose what to hold. Have we learned the differences between perspective and bald-faced lies yet? Back to the start. Truth won't be out of grasp despite our feathers. We won't both clip wings and refuse to stand. Not even in the eye of the moment we'll need to trick ourselves out of regretting. Today's no different from past Thursdays, except songs burnt and bitter after the incineration now remind me less of him. I need only maple leaves and honey of my blood to brighten them. I now sing for no man. We mask no more, too quiet, for being forced to mask weirdness. How do we line up according to height or first initial, go through the turnstile to claim an order that will kill many of us? I'm sorry, but is wholly different from I'm sorry. I respect you, but is wholly different from I respect you. Sweat and shiver in equal measure to sun baths, moon dances. Embrace hurt without connected guise of sincerity. Pre-forgetting becomes learning, like all history, all becoming. I was born on Thursday, a day of thunder. Under clouds that dropped nothing. This morning, the crow cawed, let it. I thank him for being brazen, wise, even with forced humility from what we choose him to symbolize. As I seal myself with wax, also trying to mend a loose fabric of we the people, I search in heterogeneous as unity. I hum tunes of love for love's sake into wind to shore up the fragile of us. Sometimes we don't recover, instead grow gills, bend to spines. This day needs lodi, lilies, as well as roses and a glass of rainwater for each 8 billion of us, before forgiveness of procreation, attachments, and walls. Tonight's no different except thunder moon illuminates, rise of fewer easy breaths, falls in truth, and the beauty of lament in her glow.
That's Kristen. And now we're going to hear another poem, and then we're going to hear her dissect it.
All right. Okay. Memory's intrusion. Imperceptibly small, this shard of glass that takes shelter in my fingertips, begs to be scratched, soaked, to take the throne in this velvet day. It robs charm from squirrels who tangle in whirl of black and gray, yin and yang. I barely notice. I miss delight in bird songs, sunlit moss, cats. Remembering you here is like that, a thief, a tether, a broken music box, the double dog dares my chaotic heart to pit-a-pat faster. I look to the glove you threw down for a moment. That's all it takes to miss the takeoff of the sparrow.
You know, if we could teach writing like you read, it would be lay it like you say it. Because when we read you, we hear your voice. And that is what we want writers to do, to say it on the page so it is theirs, so it is inimitable. Now, read us. Now, this is the one you're going to take apart for us.
Right.
So where were you when you thought of it? Why did you write it? How did it get on the page? What do you like about it? Just tear it apart.
I will do. Gosh, it seemed like an easy one, and I thought this one would be the one I would tear it apart. But now that I'm ready to speak about it, I realize a lot is going on here. I came up with the idea in my nook, in my writing nook. I was writing and probably longing and missing somebody and also being angry. And literally that robs delight. I love the process of writing. My nook is my favorite place. And I settle myself in there in early mornings to create. And I have a little hill in the back, not a lot of property, but I have a bird feeder and I have birds and I have squirrels and it could be magical every morning, but some mornings, if my thoughts drift to the past, I'm robbed of the beauty of those moments. So this was really that. It was a poem both to work through that angst I was feeling and sorrow, and also kind of as a reminder, and sometimes I turn to this poem actually, as a reminder to sort of stay in the present, ground yourself, live in the moment. It's something I'm getting better at. It's so hard to do, but it really makes life so much better.
It's such a good answer because once again, we have your process, which is intrusion was the ugly part, but the context was the light. And there was beauty, then the memory intruded upon it, but you're always having the light emerge from the dark. There's always a little wrinkle of angst or struggle, but then something lights up the world. And that is the redeeming thing you talked about before. So that is what everyone sees in your work. And that is what, that's what inspiration is supposed to be. You know, we're supposed to get from here to there. And that's true.
Now, sometimes you have to get there over and over, but yes.
Well, that's the story you're telling. I mean, I'm telling the same story over and over in different words because it's all I know, you know, and that's what my story is different from yours. That's why we each need our own. Luther, do you have a whole bunch of poems left?
I got a couple.
Good. Let's hear one.
This one is called Starvation. The world tilts. We only imagine we stand still. Swifts remain in flight most of their lives, even as they sleep. At dusk, they soar beyond clouds. No one understands why. If humans were content to stay in one place, eventually they would starve. There are many ways to starve. One swift may eat 10,000 insects in a day. Planets circle dying stars. Seasons go and return. In the evening, we make a wish and do not know if it will ever land.
This is really I love the way you read. It's you read your poems as if you love them. You read as if they're of value. That is, I don't know, did you know that?
I think I tried to do that, yeah.
Yeah, as you ride the line and take your time with the line as if it's important. Because poets never think they have enough, they don't think they deserve enough time. So you give it that. And Kristen, give us some of your time now with your words.
Okay, I only picked up one more, although I do have a whole book.
Yeah, but I have a book here.
So, so this one...
Let me see if I can get this book in front of me. No, I can't get it, but it's
okay.
You can't get it, but I have your book and I'm following you and there's tons of poems in here.
Yes. This one I actually wrote in honor of you.
Yay.
And it, you know, it's, I mean, I'm so grateful for our friendship and, you know, you're such a hero, but it's not just from me. I feel like whenever I read this as a reading, which I do a lot, it resonates with all the poets. I think that you're all of our heroes. It's called Creative Seeing.
Oh.
I know the pull to reach into depths of dark and heavens. I will grasp soft pointed truth of a moment, a movement, called by her illumination of space, color, her name, a smile that guides and propels us toward the action of words. Such a slight woman to reach her arms around the whole world, around laureates, the obscure, every bombshell, and mother. Perhaps she descends from aliens, to whom some credit ancient wonders. Or she is the wonder, making poets feel like miracles walking in a world of miracles, rendering form supernatural. If I'm merely a player, may she be the playwright, even as supporting character, or as bad guy, I know I'll glimmer.
Wish I had the wherewithal to respond equal to that poem, but you know what it means to me, don't you? Yeah. You do. Yeah. And I want to just read your credentials and find out what you think you're doing. You teach, you write essays, songs, and stories, play the guitar, you ride your bike. I like that in your bio.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful series with open mics and honor many poets. You have Escape Velocity is one poetry collection. Love Letters from Cuckold Creek, we're hearing today. And a children's book, Becoming the Enchantress. And you have a blog. If people Google you, they'll get you. Tell us about the children's book.
Oh, certainly. Becoming the Enchantress, a magical...
What made you do it? What made you do it?
I wrote it maybe around 2017. My former spouse is transgender. So I was trying to find a way to explain it to my 8-year-old. And I kept looking for different ways to do that. But like some of them made him giggle and some of them, you know, he just wasn't interested. And I just thought I had to write the story because there wasn't one at the time. There are more books now out, but at the time there was nothing I could find. So I wrote the book and I did my little stick figures and I read it to him at Hard Times Cafe. And we got about 3/4 of the way through and he stopped me and he said, Mom, what if that's like Dad? And I said, my goodness, what if it is? And we never had to have a big conversation after that. We went on and talked about Pokemon and then, but that just sort of laid the groundwork. So they settled into that knowledge and we're fine. It was really remarkable. So then I thought, well, the world needs this. So my very gifted now 21-year-old is an artist. So Coley did the art for it. So Coley illustrated the book. I have the story and we published it with Loving Healing Press.
It can be bought, right?
Yes. It's on Amazon and probably Bookshop. And yes.
It's called Becoming the Enchantress. Yes. Now, you are a special education teacher of great reputation because you're pretty special as a special education teacher. You really are.
In many ways.
And I know that your compassion has been spoken of by many people. Now, how do you jive everything you do? I mean, what part of you is that? What part of you is a composer and a musician and a performer? How do you integrate all these pieces of yourself?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I was talking with my in-laws about that over the weekend, and sort of what is the truest us version of us. And to be honest, Grace, I feel like my truest version is maybe on the paths on the bike out in nature away from, you know, the world, or in my nook writing poetry. Those two are sort of the core elements. And then everything sort of branches off that. I mean, except for being a parent, like that's like to the core, you know, it's everything to me. But in terms of me as an individual, I feel like it's the poetry and the out in nature and then everything else sort of, you know, playing a role.
Because that really comes through clearly, because the parent is what I start with you is the core as the parent. And that parent is protective. And we get that then in the teacher. That parent has to be creative in talking to her children about a trans father. That parent has to create and create and create, so that you're always making something new, making something that didn't exist before. Even if you're turning over a desk at school that was turned over, you're making something new. So I don't see these as jagged pieces or fragments. I see you as integrated, because your music, your nurturing, and everything about you is all the same. Yeah, and the lyrics and your poetry, it's all, how do we make this better? How do we take this thing and make it okay? And that is in all of your work, poetry, music, education. So true. And Luther, you have the same credentials. However, you've retired, I believe, right?
Yeah,
have you retired?
Yeah, I retired in 2017.
And what do you see when you look back at those years of very sacrificial work, I would say, because you give more than you get, and it is all, everything goes out and very little comes in. So how do you think that is part of your, can we say, soul?
I think so. I mean, there's so many other aspects of my life, but this was kind of something that I stumbled into. It's like I was the guy in a Western who kind of rides into town and then finds stuff that you can't leave without resolving. When I started, I was working with kids who were locked up in an institution for no other reason than that they couldn't express themselves the way people wanted them to express themselves. And we spent because it wasn't just me, it was like almost 30 years of fighting to help the world to accept these people as the human beings, the valuable human beings that they are. So I was part of that whole struggle for inclusion and disability rights. And so when I look back at it, I know that I helped a lot of people, and that one of the things that I did was help to give them their voices. Since I have a big mouth, I have plenty.
I'll tell you, that would keep me warm in the middle of the night. Luther, what you did is certainly a demonstration of your tenderness, which comes out in your music, don't you think? I think tenderness is one of your strong suits in your poetry. Also, we get turmoil. We get in nature the difficulties. But then you always, always, always bring in the pairing together of what is good. Pairing together, that is a good one for you. Mm. And being a musician and educator, do you think that they're just two separate parts of you? Are you just a talented teacher? I mean, we all are complex, so that goes without saying that we each are complex people. But what are your stripes?
My strengths?
Stripes.
Stripes.
You are a rescuer. You are a patient person who helps people, but you also are a showboat person because you couldn't perform otherwise. So part of you is a showboat.
You know, we were talking with somebody at Kristen's launch party who said something about how they didn't want to get up on stage because it makes you feel so vulnerable and open. And my response was, yeah, if you're doing it right. Remember that, Kristen?
I do, yeah.
And
vulnerability is our job. That's what we're doing.
And
we're letting ourselves open. We're letting other people.
Yeah, you're letting other people in. And when you're a teacher, you know, you're also on stage. You're performing every minute when you're up there in front of the kids. So, but yeah, I think that's how they overlap in a way. I think a lot, everything I do has been about, one way or another, it has been about communicating.
Well said. Well said. I remember I spent years in public schools. I used to come home and literally gasp for air. Lie on the bed and just gasp for air. And that wasn't even special education. But we love what you do. We love who you are and what you write. So let us each have a final poem.
Here's my final poem. It's very new. I wrote it like only maybe 2 weeks ago at the most.
The premiere?
This is almost the premiere, yes. Anthem for myself. I refuse to disappear. There is too much sunlight. Not even sorrow can stop this day from breaking into shuttered rooms. I have songs in spite of every bomb hurled against the sky, and I will sing them past the night. Listen, we are strong. We have dirt beneath our nails. We have worn out many pairs of shoes. I refuse to polish their brass medallions with my tears. Tears I reserve for the millions who march beside me. I have planted daffodils and trees beside the water where the wind may shake their blossoms. My land is a fertile land. My heart is generous and I have much work to be done.
Your Ars Poetica, for sure. That is one of your best ever written, Luther, ever, ever, ever. And a final one from my beautiful friend, who I will never leave, Kristen Kowalski-Farragut.
Thank you so much, Grace. I'll end with Soft Side of Gold. When hands clasp, glimmers felt in blood, carried in a wave of forest bathing, changes everything. Fireflies ignite the swish of my hair, always popping from another direction while I feed log after log into this insatiable fire that won't go out despite the heat. It dares me to expose, find love and softness of thighs rubbing together. Rain represses nothing but offers percussion to my, I now realize, beautiful hum. I carry a house with windows that won't close, grateful for the dysfunction. I run to the west side in the evening and drink sunset, elongated in a squint, carry gold into night.
Windows that won't close, windows that won't close. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. Our guests have been Luther Jett and Kristen Kowalski-Farragut. Our program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We thank our funders, who are the Sinipet Fund, the Rivada Foundation, Young Ki Kim Renaud, Natalie Canivore, Sandy Jackson Cohen, Avi Day Shoshani, and I am Grace Cavalieri, Our engineer is Mike Turpin. Thank you.